Friends, we're starting a sermon series today. It says, you know, he said what? He said what? And so a lot of things in the Bible that Jesus says to us that oftentimes don't really sound right to us by our standards in this world. They don't always sound fair. And so the one that we're going to be talking about today is that everybody gets a trophy. If you guys can get me on my screen here. Do you guys have me up there? Oh, perfect. Okay, we both get a participation trophy. I'm sure that everybody gets excited about that. That everybody gets a trophy, and you might think to yourself, really, Jesus? Did Jesus really say everybody gets a trophy? Well, probably not exactly those words, but in essence, that's it. Everybody gets a trophy. I don't know about you, but I'm really not a big fan of the whole participation trophy movement that's going out there in the world today. I've competed in lots of different things. There are some things that maybe I thought I deserved a trophy in, and other times I know for certain that I did not deserve a trophy. I've run races all of my life, running in track and cross country, and there were days in which every step that I took felt monumental. I could hear the sound of chariots of fire playing in the background as I strode across the grounds of running cross country. Every step was graceful. Every step was heroic. But I still didn't get first place, and I realized, man, I probably didn't deserve a trophy. Most of my days did not feel like this. Most of my days felt more like that, where the sound that was going on in my ears sounded like the sound of a dump truck emptying out a big load of garbage. Believe me, I plodded forward and was just happy to have crossed the finish line at the end. But I think to myself, are there participation trophies? Everybody gets a trophy. It doesn't always make sense to me. Imagine you've spent your entire life preparing to run a marathon, that you've worked and worked and sacrificed and you've trained and you've hit the roads every single day to prepare your body for the day in which you would race. And when the day of racing comes, you get out there and you run a beautiful race. You find yourself in first place, but your lungs are burning, your muscles are rebelling against you. And gosh, if you know any marathon runners, you lose your toenails in the middle of the race from all the exertion. And so you keep going, you keep going, you keep going until you've come down the final stretch. Your 26.2 miles is done. You race, you look up, you see that you've set a brand new record. The crowd is cheering, and you collapse as you cross the finish line in first place. When the organizer of the race comes over and shakes your hand and hands you the participation ribbon, and you sit there and watch as everybody that comes in behind you gets the participation ribbon. Even the guy that hadn't even prepared all along at all, as a matter of fact, he just decided to join the marathon 3 weeks ago and frankly didn't run hardly any of those 26.2 miles. He stopped at every water station to chat it up. And frankly, the only time he really ran was, you know, those crowd pleasers they run at the end of the race. They show up when the crowd's all there watching. And so he jogged his way to the finish line to a horrendous time. And the marathon winner sees that he gets that participation ribbon also. Thanks for being part of the race. There's something that just doesn't seem fair to me about that. Now, I know the whole participation trophy movement, the whole everybody gets a trophy movement, the philosophy behind it, that one person's ability isn't the same as everybody else's ability, and what's hard for one person might be easy for somebody else. I get that. And I get the point of it, recognizing people's personal improvements, that you've made an improvement, that you were at one point at this tier, and then you've made the improvement to get over here. We used to recognize that in cross country also. We called it our PRs, our personal records. And so we would celebrate that on the team, that everybody, if you reached your PR, we celebrated that. But we didn't get a trophy for it. And so what about this participation trophy, this whole thing? What exactly is fair about that, Jesus? And so then Jesus tells this parable about these workers who go out into the field and work all day long. And imagine ourselves, we get out there, we get hired early in the morning, and we go out under the hot sun, and we slave under the hot sun, and we work, and we're beyond excited to find out that we're employed in the morning. And we give it our very best. And by the end of the day, at the end of our 12-hour shift, we're exhausted. And so we're thankful to see that the vineyard owner went out and hired a brand new fresh set of fresh workers. We're thankful for the energy that they bring. They come and they help us push the rest of the way through the final shift. And at the end of the workday, we're excited to finally get paid. We stand in line and we see that the 11th hour workers, the ones that only work for an hour, we see the paychecks that they get paid first, and they get 80 bucks. Now, 80 bucks, that's pretty good for a day's of hard labor. I mean, when I used to be a roofer, I mean, I didn't make 80 bucks a day being a roofer, and believe me, that was hard work. So 80 bucks, I was like, that's pretty good. That's a really great rate for an hour's of work. And so I start calculating in my mind, well, gosh, if the people who work for an hour get 80 bucks, I work for 12 hours, add that up quickly, I should get something like $960. Phil, I've never made $960 in a day. I'm beyond excited. And I start figuring out all the different cool ways that I can spend my newfound income. And I reach there, and I can't wait to receive my check. I look at my check, and there I've been working all day long, and I see 80 bucks. Well, this must be some kind of mistake. I got paid the same amount of money as the guy that just worked an hour. So I go back to the vineyard owner, and I ask him. I was like, okay, well, perhaps all of these checks are for $80. Do you have 11 more of those waiting for me, one for each of the hours that I worked? And I come to find out that no, he doesn't. 80 bucks is all I'm going to get. And somehow it just doesn't seem fair. It just doesn't seem right that everybody in the vineyard, we all get a trophy, no matter how long we worked. Has anybody here ever known a day laborer, a person that goes out to work on a daily basis? They don't know if they're going to be hired from day to day. Have you ever known a day laborer? I've known folks in that position in life. I've known people in various aspects of the economic spectrum, being a minister. There was a person I knew up in Lakewood. He was very wealthy, and he gave the church $3 million. $3 million when he died. That's a ton of money. That's a generous gift. You want to know what he got for his $3 million? He got the basement named after him. Well, I'm sure that he didn't give it to get the basement named after him. He gave the gift not even knowing anything, and he simply gave because he was a gracious person. But that's what they named after him. Daniel's Hall was the basement. On the other side of that, though, I've also known people on the most extreme of the economic ladder, of being some of the poorest people in the world. People who went out on a daily basis to try to find a job and try to make an income. One of the people I knew in Lakewood was a guy named Eric who was homeless. He'd committed several felonies when he was in his early 20s. He went away and he was in jail for about a decade. During that time period, both his mom and dad died. He came out in his early 30s and without any family to fall back on. And with all of these felonies he had to put on his resume, there were no workers who would take a chance on him either. And so his best bet was to go to this little agency. It was called Minutemen, and he would go there every day. Is there any work for me to do today? And his main goal was this: make enough money so I can eat at the end of the day. And number two, if I have any extra, I can start saving it up for those horrible days in which I can't make it to the homeless shelter in time. Now, if Eric was hired at the beginning of the day, he was excited because he knew he would also be getting off early. And if he got off early, he can get into a line at a place like the City Mission that he was certain that he'd be safe at night. Now, that wasn't always the case. There are many days in which he didn't get hired until late in the day, if at all. And he spent the whole day working, knowing that he may not make any money to eat by the end of the night. Perhaps he spent the whole day working, and on really cold days, he'd have to go to another shelter called St. Malachy's. And if you're familiar at all with any of the homeless shelters up in Cleveland, St. Malachy's takes everybody. Everybody gets a trophy. It sounds great, right? They turn nobody away. Now, on the other side of that, they turn nobody away. And so the people you're sleeping next to is a very dangerous place to sleep. And Eric often described to me that at all costs he would avoid St. Malachy's church because people got robbed and stabbed in the middle of the night as they slept. And Eric would often sleep with his jacket on. He slept with his coat on so it wouldn't be stolen if he had to stay there. And one particular day he woke up and he found out that his work boots had been stolen while he slept. And he walked all the way from St. Malachy's and the west side of Cleveland to Lakewood to our church in his socks. And his socks were soaking wet by the time he got there. So I went out and bought him a new pair of work boots. Now you might say to yourself, you know what, Eric, he got what he deserved. I mean, isn't that what life's all about? You get what you deserve. I mean, he had committed these felonies, he had made his bed, but now he's got to sleep in it. Well, that's the case until you realize some of the beds that Eric slept on was a cardboard box that he put over a sewer grate in the middle of the wintertime to allow the heat of the sewer to come up into this cardboard box so he wouldn't freeze to death. And even a felon has to find food to eat. And so Eric didn't have any family, thankfully. So he didn't have that extra burden. But could you imagine if Eric did have family? That when he went out in that morning and he went to work, it wasn't just himself that he worried about feeding at the end of the day, but he worried about having enough food for his family or providing shelter for his kids. That as every hour ticked by and he didn't find a job, he would be more and more stressed out. The anxiety would be going through the roof, knowing he couldn't provide what was absolutely necessary for the day. And by the end of the day, when hope had faded away, gosh, that would be horrible. Have you ever heard a child cry because they're hungry? It's a horrible sound. And if you knew that you had a child that was hungry at home, let's just say you wouldn't want to go home that night without something to give them. And so I feel for the 11th hour workers who don't get hired until the end of the day. And so the 11th, the vineyard hour, the vineyard owner, looks at all the people who've been working all day long. People who had the benefit of knowing that at the beginning of the day that they would have money to feed their kids. They worked all day long knowing that they had earned the income that was necessary to provide shelter for themselves. They had that peace all day long. But he looked out at a group of people who had been searching for employment all day long as well, the 11th hour workers, and he realized all they lived with was fear all day, with every hour that ticked by. And he hires them also. And he pays them the same as he would everybody else in that field. Because a vineyard owner decided that nobody's going to go home without money to feed their children that night. That there would be no one who would go home. That no child would starve. Friends, it doesn't always seem fair. But grace isn't always fair. But grace is right. And so when I think about fair and unfair in terms like this about children starving, then I say, okay, Jesus, I get it. Everybody gets a trophy. Now, before I go forward with this last anecdote that I have for the sermon, I want you to understand that the way I see myself or the way I believe that God sees me in the world is no different than the way that God sees anybody else in the world. I frankly think that God sees us all as his children. There are days in which we make God smile, and there are days in which we break God's heart, that all of us have done it. So I don't think that God sees me any different than the prostitute on the street who's trying to survive from day to day. I don't think that God sees me any different than the tax cheat. I don't think that God sees me any different than the guy that ruined his family because he cheated on his wife. I don't think God sees me any different than the thief sitting in jail. I just want to be clear about that. And hopefully over the 3 years that some of you have known me, that that's clear, that I don't think God sees me any different at all. But imagine the day in which we all arrive at the pearly gates. And we get ready to go up to the pearly gates, and we realize that there's a big, long line that's there in front of us. I think I must have come off of my thing. If you guys can flip to the next slide, please. But we see this big, long line in front of us, and we look around us and we think to ourselves, really, Jesus, I've got to wait in this long line? Do I really have deserve to have to be waiting all this time? I look around and I ask myself the question, did all of these people go to church like I did? Did all of these people listen to all the sermons that I preached? I mean, how many of my sermons did they listen to? How many of the people here introduced someone to the faith? Or taught a confirmation class? How many of these folks went on a mission trip? How many of these folks gave to the church? Jesus, I did all of these things. Isn't there a fast pass for me that I don't have to sit here waiting in line with all of these sinners? I mean, I look to my left and there's this prostitute who lived on the street. I look to my right and there's a guy that cheated on his family and ruined it. The person in front of me is a tax cheat, and the person behind me, he just simply said he was sorry. At the end of his life, as he sat there alone in a jail cell. Jesus, am I really in the right line here? Is this really the line for me? Have you ever thought some thoughts in your own mind and you hope that Jesus wasn't listening? And so just imagine that Jesus is listening to us on that day. And he says, Bill, I heard your question. Are you in the right line? I say, yes, Lord, that's my question. He's like, well, you are seeking me, aren't you? Yes, Lord, I am. But then you're in the right line. But Jesus, like the older son of the prodigal son, I did all the right things. I didn't make all these mistakes that all these other people had made. Why am I having to stand in line beside them to come in? Why am I waiting so long to finally be welcomed home? And Jesus points out, he says, you see that prostitute over there that you've been identifying? Do you see the tears of joy in her eyes? Do you know how many times that she has cried in her life and they were not tears of joy? And she prayed to me every single day that I would help her simply survive on a day-to-day basis. And Bill, I know that you've had worries in your life. I know that you have troubles. But would you have liked to have traded places with her? Believe me, Lord, I would not have. And you see that guy over there that you're identifying that said he ruined his family? And you're right, he made all sorts of decisions and drove away anybody that would ever have loved him, drove all five of his kids away from his side. And the time that he died, that nobody showed up even to his funeral. But he prayed to me, and I went to him, because nobody else in the world would. Would you have rather had me close the door in his face? Should I have ignored him to satisfy you? Well, no, Lord, I hope you wouldn't ignore any of us. And I look through all of these things and I think back to all of the great things that I've done in my life. And Jesus tells me, Bill, I called you to the field early in your life to work beside me. I asked you to feed my sheep. I asked you to spread my love through the world. I asked you to build the world in a better image. In my image. Are you telling me that it was such a burden to you to work beside me that you deserve something better than everybody else? Didn't you feel any joy along the way? Yes, Lord, there was joy. Was your heart not warmed by feeding and sharing food with somebody who was hungry? Yes, Lord, my heart was warmed. Did you not make friends all the way along throughout your life because I invited you into my vineyard all across the world? Say, yes, Lord, my friends are my greatest treasure. Well, then why, Bill, are you complaining that these people who have never known the joy that you have known have found it now? Everybody gets a trophy. Everybody is welcomed home. And Jesus hands me this trophy, it's the participation trophy. Jesus hands me this participation trophy, and I look at it, and it's beautiful. It's perfect love. It's perfect forgiveness. It's all-embracing grace. And I look at all the folks around me that I thought didn't deserve what I deserve, and no longer it doesn't make any sense anymore. Somehow I eventually have gotten it. I get it. And why should I have ever asked for more than perfection? The love that Jesus gives us is never going to be anything less than perfect. Jesus doesn't give anything less than perfect. And why would any of us think that we deserve more than perfection? Friends, there isn't such a thing as more than perfection. And that's what God gives to all of his children. And so I look at my participation trophy one last time. And it shines in my eyes, and it's got this beautiful word written across it. It says, grace. And it is a trophy I receive not because of who I am. It's a trophy I receive not because of what I deserve. It's a trophy I receive simply because of the generosity of the one who gave it. Friends, all of us are dirty in some way. All of us are dirty in some way. But none of us are so dirty that we can't be washed clean by the blood of Christ. We all get a trophy. Thank goodness. And isn't it beautiful? Amen.